Good morning. I see we have both counsel, Mr. Is it Timon?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Ms. Duffy?
Good morning.
And we can hear you, and I assume you can hear me.
Yes.
Yes,
very well. Well, welcome. Good morning. Welcome to the May session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is Frankie Moore, and I'm in my office in North Platte, and I'm pleased to be joined by our Chief Judge Michael Pirtle in Omaha and Judge Rico Bishop in Lincoln. This case is State versus Thompson 20-722. We are live streaming these arguments this morning by NET, and they will be uploaded to our archives on our website. So to the extent you have anything sensitive or confidential, please keep that in mind. And with that, we are ready to begin. Mr. Timon.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal if possible.
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case, the brief does have two, issues on appeal. Primarily, it's the motion to suppress issue that is our primary issue. And then we also have an issue in regards to sufficiency of the evidence. In regards to the motion to suppress issue, the factual summary of this case is fairly simple. This was a traffic stop for a stop sign violation by law enforcement on Ms. Thompson. After stopping her vehicle, the officer also determined that she had a registration issue with her vehicle. He ran her name for warrants, ran her driver's license, and determined that there was no further criminal activity that he could find. So he was in the process of issuing a citation to her for the registration issue, and I believe he gave her a warning on the stop sign issue. The officer indicated to her that he was going to give her the citation so she could sign it. He handed it to her. She signed it and gave it back to him. And he made comment to the fact that he would get her papers to her so that she could be on her way. He then, while holding the ticket out to her, asked her if she had any drugs that might be in the vehicle or anything that a drug dog might indicate to. He testified at the motion to suppress that he didn't have any evidence at that point that led to a reasonable suspicion she might have drugs. Basically, he was just asking, just out of the blue, if she might have anything. He indicated that she did not. He asked if she would be okay with him searching the vehicle. She did say that she would be fine with that, and she asked if she should get out of the car so that he could better search it. He said yes. She got out of the vehicle. He asked her to empty her pockets, which she did, and at that time he discovered some paraphernalia, I believe a baggie, that appeared to have residue of controlled substances. He then tested that and determined that he did have evidence to arrest her, and that's the basis of the case is the possession of methamphetamine conviction. We did have a trial in this case on stipulated facts. The motion to suppress was heard before the trial. At the motion to suppress, Ms. Thompson argued that the search of her pockets or the detainment of her beyond what was necessary for the traffic stop was an illegal seizure and search of her person based upon the argument that the officer had already completed his investigation into the original reason for the stop, that being the stop sign violation and the registration issue, and that he was in the process of releasing her but had not yet done so. And therefore, he illegally detained her longer than what was necessary to complete that original investigation in order to inquire about whether she had anything else in the vehicle or any drugs that a drug dog might indicate to. So at the motion to suppress, Ms. Thompson's argument was that this was an illegal detention based upon prior case law that has found that any kind of additional time that the officer detains subject beyond that which is necessary to complete the initial investigation can be seen as an illegal detention. The state argues, or the appellee argues in this case, that this was not an illegal extension of the original detention because they believe the state argued that this was a consensual encounter after Ms. Thompson had already been released from the scene. The district court at the motion to suppress did deny the motion and found that this was a completed traffic stop, that the officer had released her from the scene and then engaged in a consensual interaction with Ms. Thompson, to which she then consented to the search. We then held a stipulated facts bench trial, At that trial, the parties agreed as to the evidence, but we did preserve, Ms. Thompson did preserve her objection in regards to the evidence of the drug evidence being admitted over the objection through the motion to suppress. Court again overruled that objection and allowed that evidence to be submitted through the stipulation of facts and found her guilty of that possession of methamphetamine charge. So this is a direct appeal of that conviction. We're not appealing the sentence that was imposed. She was sentenced to probation. We are only appealing the conviction, both on the grounds of the evidence being admitted over our objection and over the motion to suppress, as well as whether that evidence was sufficient to support a conviction.
It's our position in this case that your position is the traffic stop had been concluded. And is it your position then that the police officer cannot ask further questions about any illegal drugs or ask for permission to search?
It's our position that he can ask those questions if he's asking it as part of the original reason for the stop. It's our position that if the officer had asked these questions while he was running her name for warrants or running her driver's license or registration or insurance information, that certainly those, he's still detaining her at that point for the original charges. So any questions that he asks are certainly fair game. But in this specific situation, he had already determined that the only crimes she had committed were the no registration violation or the expired registration violation and the traffic or the stop sign violation. And he had already prepared the citation, had given it to her to sign. She had returned it back to him. And as he was then getting her driver's license and insurance information to return to her is when he then inquired about whether she had anything else. He did not indicate to her.
Yes, he had not returned those documents to her. Does that make this different in that it had the whole traffic stop had not been completed?
Yes, Your Honor. In my brief, we did cite State versus Hartzell, a 2019 Supreme Court case where we had a very similar situation. The Supreme Court in the Hartzell case actually upheld the search, finding that in that specific case, the officer had given the defendant the ticket, had told her she was free to go, and then the officer had actually removed herself from the side of that defendant's car, then turned around, came back, and then re-engaged. And so the Hartzell court went through an analysis of looking at the various factors and found that in the totality of circumstances, that was a completed traffic stop that was then followed up with a consensual interaction or a voluntary interaction between the officer and the defendant that then led to the search and the discovery of drugs.
Mr. Tymon?
Yes, sir.
Do you think the fact that the officer was still standing inside the door, the door was open, he was standing between the driver and the door, so the door was not able to be closed, is that a significant factor in determining that the stop was still ongoing?
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, the district court's ruling was that any reasonable person would have assumed that they would have been free to go if they were standing in Ms. Thompson's shoes. But in this specific case, she had not yet been given the completed citation or her documents. The officer had not said that she was free to go. He had just previously said that he would get her things so she could be on her way. And yes, the officer was standing in the doorway. I think this was a situation where instead of rolling down her window, she had to open the door. So the officer was still standing there. For her to drive off, she would have had to drive off safely, she would have had to close her door, but the officer was still there. So in our opinion, this was not a completed traffic stop until he actually gave her documents that she needed and removed himself from the doorway so that she could then leave. So it's our position that this was a legal detention beyond what was necessary and that the questioning and the search went beyond what he needed for the traffic stop. In regards to, I don't know if you have any other questions in regards to the suppression issue, just briefly on the sufficiency evidence of the evidence, it's our position that there was no statements from Ms. Thompson that she had knowledge of the methamphetamine being in this baggie. It was a residue amount that the officer found a baggie that had some kind of residue. There was no evidence from the officer that she was showing any signs of being under the influence of any drugs. or that she gave any acknowledgement to knowing that it was there or what it was. And it's our position that possession clearly needs to have more than just something found. It needs to have knowledge of what those things are and knowledge of them being present. So that is the second issue. We understand that that's a more of a minor issue in regards to the suppression issue. But it is our position that either the court's conviction should be overturned because of the insufficient evidence or because of the admission of this illegal evidence or illegally obtained evidence that we believe was a violation of her Fourth Amendment rights.
I want to take you back to when he asked her to search the inside of the vehicle. She gave him permission. She then gets out. Was there an explanation as to his request for her to then empty her pockets?
I believe that it was just I think he was just asking her if I remember right. I think he asked, and it's on the body cam, which I don't know if you have that as part of the record, but I believe that he either asked her if she should empty her pockets or if she pulled out her pockets. We don't have any objection or we don't have any disagreement with that being a consensual encounter. It's just a matter of whether it was part of an illegal detention extension.
I understand.
So we're not arguing that he coerced her to do that.
So the fact that it occurred after where you think the traffic stop should have ended.
In our opinion, he should have told her she was free to go. Then if he reengaged and she decided to allow herself to continue talking with her, then I guess that would be at her own risk.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simon. We did take you through all of your time, including your
rebuttal time.
Thank you. Ms. Duffy, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee of the state of Nebraska. Appellant argues the district court erred in overruling her motion to suppress and that the evidence was insufficient to support the conviction. Today, I intend to focus my argument on the argument related to the district court's denial of the motion to suppress. The state believes the district court correctly denied the motion because appellant consented to the search. The district court found the request to search at the conclusion of the traffic stop was not an unreasonable search or seizure because appellant consented. The record shows at the conclusion of the traffic stop, the officer asked if the appellant had any problems if he looked in her car, and appellant said, no, go ahead. Appellant asked if the officer wanted her to be out, and the officer responded, would you please? The officer then asked if there was anything in appellant's pockets. She said no, and the officer then asked if she would turn out her pockets, and appellant began to take items from her pocket. Yes, Your Honor.
At what point was she free to leave?
When the officer had handed her her documents.
He was still standing between the door and her at that point, was he not?
Yes, Your Honor, he was. And I understand that that is, a factor that this court needs to consider. But I believe that looking at the totality of the circumstances, a reasonable person would have felt free to say no. And at that point, ask the officer to move, or the officer would have moved, and then they could have left. So in this case, the officer, I'll kind of move into that portion of my argument. Our first note is that this court has previously noted that an officer's inquiries into matters unrelated to the justification for the traffic stop do not convert the encounter into something other than a lawful seizure, so long as those inquiries do not measurably extend the duration of the stop. And so here, while the officer was asking the appellant if there was anything illegal in the car or anything a drug dog would indicate on, he was gathering her documents to prepare them to give them to her.
So she was not free to leave at that point?
Not at that point, but the officer was still completing the traffic stop at that point. So the officer, approaches the vehicle initially. They have a short discussion, I believe, about the registration issue. And the officer goes back to his car. And then I believe at about 11 minutes or so into the body cam video, we can see he approaches the car again. When he initially approached the car, they spoke through the driver's side window. And when he gets out of the car, we don't really see what happened between, it's his body cam. So we just see what he's directly looking at there. But as he gets out of the car, we see that the driver's side door is now partially open. So as he approaches, he opens the door further so that he can speak with appellant. He explains the purposes for the stop, that he'd stopped her for failing to stop at a stop sign, and then the registration issue came to light. He informed her of the disposition of both of those issues. She signs the citation and he says, I'll get you, I think his words were, I'll get you your stuff or I'll get you your documents so that you can get out of here. And then as he is gathering the documents together, you know, her license, her registration, the citation, the warning, that's when he asks those questions. So he's still getting everything together. And then as he hands her her documents, he says, would you have any problems if I went ahead and looked in the car? Something to that effect. And she has her documents in her hands and she says, no, go ahead. Now, understand that he was still standing in that doorway, but I think a reasonable person. Yes,
Your Honor. Would you agree that in light of that he was handing her documents, he was still standing between her and the door, that the encounter had not de-escalated from a detention, a lawful detention, to a casual encounter?
Your Honor, the state believes it was really kind of a simultaneous thing. I think as he tells her, which he's not required to say you're free to leave, but he tells her, I'm going to get you your stuff, you can get out of here. And then he gives her the documents as he's saying, oh, would you have any problems if I looked in the car? She has all of her documents in her hand as she says, no, go ahead. Now, you know, had he held everything back and kind of asked, oh, you know, that might be a different.
But he's still standing in the door. It's not like she can close her door and say, yeah, no, thank you. I'd like to head out now. Right. I mean, would you agree that it really had not de-escalated to a casual encounter at that point in time, given that he was still between her and her door?
Your Honor, no, that the state's position is that even though he was standing in the door, that she had the purpose of the stop had been explained. He told her what was going to be happening, you know, the disposition of the reason she was stopped. He said, I'll give you your documents, you can get out of here. And then he gave her the documents. And I do understand that the fact that he's standing in the door does maybe make us look twice at this. But I think that we don't view that standing alone. We look at the totality of the circumstances. Would a reasonable person felt they were free to leave? And I think the district court correctly concluded that a reasonable person would have felt free to say no. They've been told why they were stopped. They've been told the results of that stop. They've been told, I'll get you your stuff, you can leave. And then they've been given their documents. So the state's position is that encounter, I realize it's very close in time. And I think, you know, Hartzell, the cases that appellant cites too, had a little bit more of a break in time, or, you know, the officer stepped back. But I don't think that the fact that the officer didn't is dispositive of the analysis. I think it's one factor to consider. So the state's position. Oh, yes, Your Honor.
No, sorry to interrupt you. No. But what about, even if we were to determine that it was appropriate for the question to search the car, when she gets out of the car and she offers to get out of the car, but he's the one who says, will you hold your dog? Because there's a dog in the car. And he says, will you hold your dog? So she's like, oh, yeah, hasn't my dog been, you know, I'm glad my dog's not been barking or whatever. Mm-hmm. So she grabs her dog and she says, you want me to get out of the car? And he says, you know, sure, get out of the car. Mm-hmm. So then when she gets out of the car, he says, do you have anything in your pockets? And she says, no. And he says, would you turn out your pockets? Talk about that request.
Well, Your Honor, the state believes that the appellant consented to that request. And I think appellant even admitted that they're not challenging her consent to that, the challenge here is based on appellant's contention that the detention was illegally extended. So the state believes that the officer asked if appellant would turn out her pockets, appellant chose to do so. So the state believes that was, again, a request. Appellant was free to say no. She chose to do it. And so we don't see an issue with that. The state believes that was appellant consented to that search, as it were.
What was the reasonable or probable cause to suspect that there were illegal items or drugs in the vehicle to begin with?
Well, Your Honor, the state's position is that this was not based on that. This was based simply on consent. I believe the officer testified at the suppression hearing that while he had observed some indicators of possible use, he did not observe anything to lead him to the conclusion that the appellant was under the influence at the time. I believe that's on page 23 of the Bill of Exceptions. He said, the only observation I made was signs of meth use, but not to the point of being under the influence at that time. So I think it was just, I think officers often will ask for consent to search. This court sees those cases kind of a lot where there's a question of was consent given. So I think here the officer was just asking for consent to search, and appellant gave that consent. So the state's position, just overarching, is that the district court correctly concluded that the consent to search at the conclusion of the traffic stop, that the officer's request to search at the conclusion of the traffic stop was based on the consent of the appellant, and that the district court was therefore correct in denying to suppress. Briefly on the sufficiency argument, I believe we've adequately addressed that in our brief. The state notes that it needed to show that the appellant had possession of the substance, and that she knew of the nature or character of its substance. When the baggie was first pulled out, she immediately denied ownership, then later said, well, she placed an antihistamine in it, and then later again said it was not her bag. So we believe that from these conflicting stories, it can be inferred that she knew of the nature or character of the substance in the bag.
Ms. Duffy, what is your, well, let me ask you this. Did you take a look at the State versus Hansen decision out of the Supreme Court of Utah?
Your Honor, I did not read the full decision in its entirety. I did read Hartzell and the information that Hartzell cites, as well as this court referenced the Hartzell and the Hansen decision in an unpublished opinion in 2020, State v. Georges. And so I've kind of read this court's analysis and the Nebraska Supreme Court's analysis of it. So I'm familiar kind of with the basic facts of why the Utah Supreme Court determined there was no de-escalation in that encounter.
The facts in Hansen are very similar to the facts here.
Well, Your Honor, I think in Hansen, though, we have where I believe, based on the Hartzell case's recitation of the Hansen facts, that there was a second officer that appeared on the scene with lights going while the first officer is, I believe, the Nebraska Supreme Court noted that in Hansen, the officer conducted the stop for two purposes, an improper lane change in an uninsured vehicle. That when the officer returned to the defendant, a second officer appeared and with his lights activated, or that the second officer arrived and activated his lights, excuse me. This is on page, I believe, 85 or page 90 of the Hartzell decision, that the second officer appears, activates his lights, that the first officer gives the defendant in that case a verbal warning being uninsured, but doesn't discuss a warning for the lane change. And then the officer returned the documents and started to ask those questions. So here the state believes we have very different facts. We don't have a second officer arriving. The officer here informed the appellant of the reason she was pulled over, as well as the disposition for both of those reasons. I recognize that, yes, we have the officer returning the documents and then, you know, asking to search, which was what happened in Hansen. But the state believes that the facts are different enough from Hansen to distinguish it. I see I'm out of time, but I can further discuss that if you'd like to, a further comparison with Hansen or Hartzell.
That's fine. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I am out of time. So unless there are additional questions, we request you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Duffy and Mr. Timon. I appreciate your arguments and your appearance via WebEx today. Your case is now submitted and you are excused.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both.